Hi everybody, I'm Ramon Stoplenberg, located currently somewhere in the deep north mountains of the country of Georgia, standing along a very icy creek. But hey, it's not about me. This is number 0634, the Stuff File program, and you're here for Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0634. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Cadwell Turnbull is back for his second visit with his second sci-fi novel. This one is called No Gods, No Monsters.
My quick pitch is that it's the civil rights era, but modernized and with monsters from Caribbean and popular folklore. But it's about a bunch of other things too. It's about people struggling with addiction. It's about what the world does once monsters come out into the world and how do they adjust to that new reality. And it's about finding, you know, family and finding community in a radically changed world.
Margot Holmes is one of the producers of Music from the Edges of Canada, a new national music series that brings 22 artists together in 11 different venues across the country that can be streamed into your homes.
We've gone to people that we have worked with for many years, and so we have dealt with theaters really across Canada, but in particular where we live. So the Tidemark Theater in Campbell River, British Columbia on Vancouver Island, the Yukon Arts Center in Whitehorse, Northern Arts and Cultural Center in Yellowknife, and then all the way to the other end of the country, the Imperial Theater in St. John, New Brunswick.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter joins veteran Canadian comic David Seinberg as he examines his world of laughter with Inside Comedy. Don't expect a sermon this time on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0634, was entrepreneur Ramon Stoppelenberg. After running an art house movie theater for 11 years in Cambodia, he recently moved to the country of Georgia, where he's looking for a movie theater location there in the capital of Tbilisi. Thank you very much, Ramon, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And just before we get to the Stuff File news, I gotta mention very quickly that I first met Ramon Stoppelenberg when I had him as a guest on my old radio show. He had a website which you can still look up. It's called letmestayforaday.com. He was a young journalism student from the Netherlands who loved to travel, and as the name of his website indicates, he was traveling around the world and staying at total strangers' homes for a day at each stop and documenting his travels on his website and blog. I had him on the air several times during his travels, and then when he came to Montreal, we had him in the studio for the full show. He was just a fun, engaging guy with wanderlust, a fantastic person. So whenever he sets up his theater in Tbilisi, I know we're going to have him back on the show. Anyway, let's get to the stuff, shall we? Doctors at Klaipėda University Hospital in Lithuania were shocked to discover the source of a man's abdominal pain through an x-ray on October the 1st. Apparently, as a response to giving up alcohol about a month ago, the man had swallowed more than a kilogram of metal objects, nuts, nails, bolts, screws, and knives. It took surgeons 3 hours to remove the pieces and repair the inner walls of his stomach. The unnamed man is being kept under observation and has been offered a checkup from the neck up. Well, perhaps, in this case, drinking wasn't so bad for him. Okay, full disclosure. One of the things I hate about television news is the man on the street interview, especially if it's live. I don't really care to watch them, and when I was in television news, I really, really didn't like doing them. So I feel for Corey Johnson of KSLA-TV in Shreveport, Louisiana, who was interviewing lottery ticket purchasers on October the 4th about what they'd do with the nearly $700 million jackpot if they won. Well, she came across a guy named James who went into a lot of detail. Now, before I play this for you, please note the nonplussed response to James's answer that Corey has.
I'm here with someone else who has gotten their ticket. Now, James, you bought your ticket. What are you going to do with that money if you win?
Well, I'm definitely going to get a new supercharged Mustang with dual exhaust and about 5 kilos of cocaine, and I'll be good to go.
Okay, so you like cars. You like cars.
I love cars.
I don't like cars. I don't know what I would do with all of that money. I would have to sit on it, pray on it for a day, figure out what I want to do with it. But, Doug, back to you. I mean, yeah.
So you like cars was her response? Wow. And her sign-off wasn't exactly graceful.
Doug, back to you. I mean, yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm sure there's enough facial recognition in this live clip that police in the area will be tracking down, if not keeping an eye on old James. As for Corey, who knows what method she might employ to get through this live television moment.
I would have to sit on it, pray on it for a day.
That might work. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 46-year-old Claire Vickers and 44-year-old Barry Douglas were enjoying a drunken night out when, at 2 a.m., they decided to head over to the Aldershot Lido in Hampshire, England, slip under a fence, and speed down a water slide in a closed park. Unfortunately, a barrier blocks the exit from the slide after hours, and Vickers and Douglas both slammed into it. Vickers' shin snapped and broke her skin, and every bone in her left foot was broken. Douglas broke his leg and both ankles. Said Vickers, "I looked over at Barry. He was in the fetal position and silent. That's when I thought we were both going to die." After 2 hours of screaming and banging on the slide, Vickers and Douglas were rescued. "We're idiots. Let that be a lesson," Vickers said. "I'm still having nightmares 1 month on. The pain was unbearable." Yep, not a bright move. By the way, no charges were filed. Okay, initially when I found this story, I said, I thought they've suffered enough. By the way, relatively new listeners to the Stuff File program, if you're wondering why they haven't been christened as the idiot of the day, it's because they were drunk. Longtime listeners know that idiots have to be stone cold sober. And that comes later. Anyway, as I was saying, initially when I found this story, I was feeling sorry for them and I thought they had suffered enough. But then I found some additional news. These two pinheads are planning to sue. Both appeared in wheelchairs on ITV's early morning news show called This Morning. Douglas told hosts Holly Willoughby and Philip Schofield that the park was too easy to get into and they may take legal action as a result of their injuries.
They should take security there, for a start, and the fence should be secured, and there will be the legal action being taken.
So, I mean, it's a tricky thing for them, really, isn't it? Because you know, you shouldn't have been there in the first place. Which is the reason, and you know, you haven't been prosecuted, which you're lucky about. And so you're saying that if they had, if they'd fixed the fence, if they put security, so that at their own expense, put security there to patrol it, if they'd made sure that those chains had padlocks on them properly and all that sort of stuff, then we wouldn't have been able to go down the slide, which you shouldn't have been going down in the first place.
There's 100%.
I just think that everybody makes a mistake. Everybody has got drunk at some point in their life and made a silly choice.
Yeah.
And that's what this was.
Oh, boo bloody who. I've got just one thing to say.
Stupid! You're so stupid!
Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Science fiction writer Cadwell Turnbull is back on the show with the release of his second novel, the follow-up to The Lesson. This one is called No Gods, No Monsters. Cadwell joins us via Skype from Boston to talk about his latest tome. Hi, Cadwell.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, last time when we talked, it was just when your first one came out, The Lesson, and that one took place in your hometown where you grew up in the U.S. Virgin Islands, and this one takes place in the place where you now live, which is Boston. What is it you have against these places?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's terrorizing the community wherever you live, apparently.
I suppose so. I mean, Boston doesn't get off that badly in this book. I think, you know, Boston's okay by the end of it. I think in The Lesson, I, you know, lost a lot of sleep because I felt like I kind of overdid things in terms of the climax of that book. But no, it's love. I mean, books need climaxes, right? So bad things happen in climaxes.
Yeah. Well, actually, before we get to No Gods, No Monsters, let's go back a little bit. For those who have read The Lesson, and for those who haven't, I urge them to do so because it's a fantastic novel. But without giving anything away, with all that took place in that particular book, in the hometown, the place of your birth, what was the reaction of people that you knew, friends, family, people you grew up with, who have read the book and have seen what you've done to your homeland?
What? mostly fine. I think that, you know, if there were some critiques, I didn't get them. I agonized over it for many, many months. You know, like there's the arc phase of the book before, you know, the general readership gets to it and it's just going through, you know, reviewers and such. During that time, I, you know, would wake up in the middle of the night and just second guess myself and agonize over the decisions that I made with the ending. And it actually turned out mostly fine. Everyone, the critiques that I got were mostly like things I had gotten wrong. You know, like if there was a ballpark that I misnamed, I did do that. Someone called it out. If I went down a certain street and went in the wrong direction to get to another street, someone pointed that out to me. But no one seemed to mind much what happened to people during the book's climax.
Okay, so let's move forward to this book, No Gods, No Monsters. What are the unsuspecting Bostonians going to be in store for in this one?
I mean, I would say, you know, I learned the lessons of my first book, and what happens in the second book is pretty low key. I mean, you know, we're pretty much talking about, you know, death tolls here, and with No Gods or Monsters, the death toll is fairly minimal. I think people are going to be fine mostly. So far, what I've heard from people that live in Boston is that they like seeing references to the places they know in the book. Not a lot of talk about what happens in the climax.
Well, tell us about the story. What is No Gods, No Monsters about?
It's, you know, my quick pitch is that it's the civil rights era, but modernized and with monsters from Caribbean and popular folklore. But it's about a bunch of other things, too. It's about people, you know, struggling with addiction. It's about what the world does once monsters come out into the world and how do they adjust to that new reality. And it's about finding, you know, family and finding community in a radically changed world.
Again, as you say, you have a Caribbean flavor to it, even though it takes place in Boston. Your last novel did take place in the Caribbean. There's a lot of mythology involved here. Does any of this go back to, say, your own childhood with the kinds of stories that parents and grandparents used to share with kids?
Yeah. So, I mean, big parts of the book are set in Boston, the Boston Somerville area. But, you know, there's also some scenes set in North Carolina. There's some scenes set in Virginia. And there's a big chunk of the book that's set in the Virgin Islands. And The monsters in the book are very much informed by things that I heard as a child, cousins or aunts, scary stories we told when the power was out, which was often back home. And so there's a monster called a Sukuyant, which removes their skin, and then they stalk people and drink blood. There's what in the story is called a woo-woo, which was based on a story that I heard from, I think it was my aunt, when I was a child. And, you know, then there's some monsters of my own invention, but they're all very much influenced by flavors of Caribbean folklore and also flavors of, you know, the popular stuff that I grew up loving as a kid.
Mm. You know, for you, this was all a creative outlet. In today's world, someone would be calling child services.
Which part?
Yeah, were the things that people have told you when you were growing up as a kid.
You know what's interesting about it is that I think that some of it was probably my elders torturing me, but you know, there's a kind of like half belief that people back home have in the strange and the paranormal. Like, you know, we tell each other not to answer if someone whispers our name in the night because we really believe something will happen. And so I think some of it is also nurture in a way. It's
now you see.
I guess that's how I choose to look at it.
This makes all sense to me because I have West Indian parentage myself, so I understand this. I'm just curious to know, because obviously since you understand it, and like I said, the first book was amazing. Because you understand it, was there ever any concern when you sat down to write either your first one or this second novel that some of the things that you're bringing up culturally might not translate to the general population, or were you always assured that it definitely will?
You know what's interesting? You know, when I went to undergrad, I left the Virgin Islands, you know, because I wanted to kind of branch out. And it was the first time that I knew that I talked with an accent. someone had to point it out to me that my accent was pretty strong. And after that, I kind of had this several months where I learned how to code switch into a more standard variety. I still have an accent. But It feels like that with the books. You know, I write the book thinking this is pretty normal, and then I'll hear someone, you know, either ask a question that makes me realize that that normal thing I thought was normal isn't normal, or they will completely misunderstand like an aspect of the narrative because I had not bothered to explain a particular nuance about Caribbean culture. So like they'll think that, you know, everyone in a lesson is middle class when I know that the people that live upstairs that have a house and they built the house and it's a family home over generations, they aren't necessarily wealthy. They inherited that land. They could probably be middle class or, working class. But the people that live below that are renting out are generally poorer. But I never explained that in lesson. And I don't know Gods and Monsters either. It's just one of those things that I know, being from home, that I guess I take for granted, and there's a ton of things like that. Mm.
You mentioned earlier some of the things you learned after writing the first book. Was this an easier project to do now that you have your first book, your first successful novel under your belt? Was it easier writing No Gods, No Monsters?
It was faster. But I think it was faster because I had a deadline and, you know, I had to turn it in when I had to turn it in. I don't think it was easier. It was in a lot of ways harder. I was trying to do something similar to the lesson. It was in conversation with that first book. But I wanted to do more. And so, you know, because I had set out to challenge myself, it was challenging. And there's quite a few times where I felt like I didn't know what I was doing. And I'm feeling that same thing again with the follow-up to No Gods, No Monsters. So, you know, no, it wasn't easier.
And we should mention it is a follow-up, but it is not a sequel, correct?
To the lesson?
Yes. You mean?
Yeah, no Gods, No Monsters is its own thing. Though I have a longer response to that. It is its own thing.
Okay. Again, great success with The Lesson. It was an amazing novel. I'm looking forward to reading No Gods, No Monsters. It's out now. Are you working on a third novel?
Yes. The third novel is called We Are the Crisis. It is a sequel. It's a sequel to No Gods, No Monsters.
Excellent. Looking forward to that one as well. The current one, No Gods, No Monsters. Cadwell Turnbull, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Cadwell Turnbull, author of the sci-fi novel No Gods, No Monsters. You can go to my website at thestuffwild.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0634, and you'll find links to Cadwell's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a show that can be heard on many of fine radio stations, including CFMH-FM, local 107.3 FM in St. John, New Brunswick.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to one of the producers of Music from the Edges of Canada. Plus, Stuart Nullman is along with another edition of Book Banter. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way, and much more Stuff File news here on The Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, no doubt you've seen the plethora of Geico commercials on television over the years, and you know that they can cover just about everything.
Geico can help with way more than car insurance. Boats, homes, motorcycles, even umbrella coverage.
But they have their limits. For instance, your auto insurance will not cover you for spreading an STD while having sex in your car. A woman identified in Kansas court records only as M.O. demanded that Geico pay her $1 million for a claim she filed against a driver who allegedly infected her with human papillomavirus, or HPV, when the couple had sex in his car. Geico sued for a declaratory judgment that their auto policies do not provide coverage for M.O.'s alleged injuries. The company won. Here's the actual text from the memorandum and order. Among other things, Geico alleges that the auto policy only applies to bodily injuries arising out of the ownership, maintenance, or use of the auto, and that MO's alleged damages have no nexus to the ownership, maintenance, or covered use of the 2014 Hyundai Genesis. In other words, the vehicle's covered use did not cause MO's alleged injuries. Instead, her injuries arose from an intervening cause, namely her failure to prevent transmission of STDs by having unprotected sex. Wow, that's a little harsh. It goes on to say, likewise, the umbrella policy does not provide coverage because it only applies if the auto policy provides coverage. Geico also asserts that various policy exclusions preclude coverage under the umbrella policy. So, in other words, Geico is taking the long-winded way of saying, this is what happens when the rubber doesn't meet the road.
Take a closer look at Geico. Great savings and a whole lot more.
Yep. But there are exceptions. 25-year-old David Kessler of Framingham, Massachusetts, scored a date online on Tinder. It's unclear how the date went, unless you count that when Kessler took the woman home, she ran inside, slammed and locked the door, and called police. When officers arrived, Kessler was still outside holding a duffel bag. An officer searched the bag and found a switchblade, illegal to carry in the state. The officer also recognized unspecified materials that could be used to make pipe bombs, which provided cause to search Kessler's car. That's when officers called the bomb squad, closed the street, and evacuated nearby homes. Kessler was released on $5,000 bail, but must wear a GPS monitor at all times because the judge declared him dangerous. So, do you think he's getting a second date? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Volusia County, Florida sheriff's deputies pulled over a speeding truck. They had followed it for almost a mile, noticing its turn signal was on the whole time, a sign of an impaired driver, or a senior citizen, I guess. Not to mention it also drifted back and forth. Sure enough, the driver's speech was slow and slurred, and the driver smelled of alcohol consumption. Ivor Ruiz admitted he had been drinking earlier and agreed to a field sobriety test, but first he asked the deputy, could he put on some pants? Not the deputy, Ivor. You know what I mean. Sure enough, he wasn't wearing any. He failed the test and was arrested and has since resigned from his job. He was a police officer in Belle Isle, Florida, 30 miles away. When he was handing out tickets in Belle Isle, was it under the ruling of do as I say, not as I do? And also, does anybody want to know why he wasn't wearing any pants in his truck? Just asking. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Music from the Edges of Canada is a new national music series showcasing 22 Canadian artists from coast to coast, and it's starting this month and going right through until March of next year. One of the producers of the upcoming events is Margot Holmes. She joins us now on the line from British Columbia. Hi, Margot.
Hi, Peter. How are you today?
Jess Tickety-Boo, thanks very much for being on the program with us. Is this a situation where necessity is the mother of invention? Did the idea of this come out of what we all went through in the last 18 months through the pandemic?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. The concept of, you know, people streaming concerts, well, musicians streaming concerts. And really, we saw that probably this was going to need to continue because artists could not tour the way they used to tour, even for this coming year.
Now, as the title explains, Music from the Edges of Canada, you've gone to some far-flung locations to put these all together, haven't you?
Well, yes, the edges of Canada, the big country. So, yes, we've gone to really people that we have worked with for many years. And I say we, my partner, Debbie Peters, is part of a business partner with the Maverick Cooperative. And so we have dealt with theaters really across Canada, but in particular where we live. And so the Tidemark Theatre in Campbell River, British Columbia on Vancouver Island, the Yukon Arts Centre in Whitehorse, Northern Arts and Cultural Center in Yellowknife, and then all the way to the other end of the country, the Imperial Theater in St. John, New Brunswick.
So as I mentioned, 22 Canadian artists. How did you come to the grouping of the Canadian artists involved in this showcase?
Well, many of the artists that are in this showcase are artists that we work with, have worked with, and then we collaborated with those theaters in each of the, you know, regions to hear what artists they would like to have. And so it really was a collaborative effort in picking the artists. And we also wanted to ensure that we had multiple genres and that there really was representation from all genres. And obviously, we wanted to have Indigenous artists represented, which we're very pleased about. We have 6 Indigenous bands and artists on this showcase series, and you know, it was important to us that they lived actually not far from the theaters. That was the initial part of this conversation,
was that the artists that are on the series, they live in those regions. And so it really is a showcase for them, because many of them, especially in the north, in the Yukon and the Northwest Territories, haven't been able to go and travel.
Now, this is a unique idea, the fact that you can stream these concerts right across the country. But from the perspective of the artists who are involved, in the theaters that they will be in, will there actually be an audience there too?
Yes, there will. So that was part of it as well. Like artists in the last year, one of the most difficult things to do is to go into an empty theater and put on a show that gets streamed out. And so the goal here was that, you know, the artists that live in the Atlantic provinces, all four provinces are represented, will be in the theater, the Imperial Theater in St. John. And they will have live audiences in those theaters while streaming out those concerts to really anywhere in the world if they wish.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask as well, because not only is this show heard in Canada, it is heard in places around the world. So let's talk about the participation of those who want to view it via streaming. They can buy tickets. They could also buy a season pass. But I guess you just alluded to, they can do it from anywhere in the world, not just in Canada.
Yeah, it's really, part of this project is that the four theaters already have people that they have streamed out to. They've been streaming concerts. And so it's a way for these artists to be discovered by people really anywhere in the world, where, you know, they might get word that this is happening. And so the concerts, each of the streaming concerts is available for 48 hours. So that helps all the time zones anywhere in the world. People can watch it. It's really unlimited viewing for those 48 hours as long as they have a ticket.
And what is the cost of the tickets and what is the cost of the pass?
So the tickets for each of the shows is $20 plus, you know, service charges and tax, depending on where people live. So, you know, yes, it's different in each of the four areas that we're dealing with. And they can buy a early bird pass for $79. And that gets you all 11 concerts. And again, plus, of course, service charges and tax.
So you've worked with many of these artists before. So go ahead, plug some of your favorites. Who are you excited about? I know it's like saying, what's your favorite child? But who are you excited about as far as these concerts are concerned?
Oh, no. You want me to go through and tell you? Well, I mean, to be really honest, I'm excited about all of them. And yes, have I heard some of them before? Yes. And I'm really, the fun part of this, too, is that there's two shows a night. There's two artists a night. And those artists might be quite diverse in what they present. But the idea, again, you know, we talk about, you know, the adventurous music listener, really that's what this is about. It's discovering new artists. So, you know, I'm oh my goodness, there's so many to talk about that I can't pick just one, Peter. That would be crazy. But I will say that, you know, there's artists from the north. Obviously, we've got let me just go here for a moment and look. So we have Soda Pony actually starting off the series out of the Yukon. And we have Joelle Raboud and Nico Rhodes. We have Ryan McNally and Blue Moon Marquee. So those are the artists coming from the Yukon. You know, from Campbell River, British Columbia. We're actually, the whole series starts on October 28th. With Crystal Dos Santos and Locarno. And, you know, both these artists, award-winning, very different in what they do, but both have a huge following. And so, you know, excited to be starting the series with them. And then we have Roots and Grooves with Rick Scott and Nico Rhodes and Tiller's Folly happening November 20th. Diet and Jim Burns and Speed Control and David Gogo. Those are all the artists from British that are doing concerts at the Tidemark Theater in British Columbia. And then, of course, we go to the other side of our beautiful country. And in the Imperial Theater, we have Janet Call and Iris Nathan on November 7th. We have Wolf Castle and La Hostesse de l'Air on January 16th. And Jamala and Kim Harris on February 13th. So quite a, you know, just I hope people will go and have a look and read about the artists, listen to them. If they go to our website, musicfromtheedges.ca, they can check all the artists out. There's video on them, as well as just really reading what the, who they are and why we chose them.
This sounds like an amazing idea, and I'm wondering, even though we're getting back to normal or back to a new normal, and venues are opening up and people are seeing live performances on a more regular basis, do you anticipate that after this is all said and done, when you're done your last concert on March 27th, that this is something that might continue into the future beyond the 11 concerts you have planned with the 22 Canadian artists?
Well, it's funny you should ask. People keep asking us that when we're doing interviews and talking about it. And I think the answer is probably yes. You know, when you're trying to mount a big project like this, you're not thinking about, okay, are we going to do this again? But I personally believe that the concept of streaming concerts is here to stay. Will it replace live? No, it won't replace live. But boy, if the production is done well, if they're full production shows, they're not from somebody's bedroom, they can be really fabulous. And I think it's also, an art form that has to be perfected and practiced. I just want to comment that the other part of this project is not only are we employing artists, but we're really employing over 140 cultural workers, so technicians, marketing professionals, theater, like people that work in theaters, as well as agents and managers. So, we feel really good about the fact that there's revenue for those people who really have been hit hard by the pandemic.
Well, it's an excellent idea all the way around. People can get more information by going to the website musicfromtheedges.ca, correct?
That's correct.
Margot, thank you very much for being on the program with us, and big successes, I'm sure, for all the concerts you have coming up starting October 28th.
Great. Thanks so much. We really appreciate you talking to you today.
Margot Holmes, one of the producers of Music from the Edges of Canada. The website is musicfromtheedges.ca. You can go to my website at thestuffall.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0634, and you'll find the links to their site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a show that is heard on many a fine radio station, including CFMU-FM 93.3 in Hamilton.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do have an opportunity to talk about a comedy legend. No, it's not Stuart. But Stuart Nolman is here. Hi, Stu.
A booga, booga, booga. I think you know what I'm referring to.
Absolutely.
Okay, just checking. But for those who are listening now here on Book Banter, who I'm just, you think I'm just making silly sounds, that's not the case, because it deals with a legendary comedian who's a fellow Canadian too. But let me just start by saying that there are a great deal of people who deeply appreciate comedy in all forms, plus the men and women who delivered those laughs, whether it be in a club, on stage, in the movies, radio, TV, and on LP records. I miss those LP records. And as well, there are many people who have watched, listened to, and followed the lives, careers, and humor of many of these great names in comedy and can be either armchair or scholarly experts on the subject. I wouldn't mind being a scholarly expert on comedy. But that's another story. But there is one type of comedy expert that carries a much more degree of credibility, and it's those rare few who are comedy experts but are bona fide comedians by trade. It's their advantageous position of working within the comedy world as a stand-up actor, writer, producer, or director that get that rare chance to be in contact with their contemporaries or legendary figures on a regular basis that gives them that advantage, which sets them head and shoulders above your run-of-the-mill comedy maven. Now, one of these people that we just mentioned earlier in, well, sort of discreetly, but not in name, is David Steinberg. He's a native of Winnipeg who, while attending rabbinical school in Chicago during the early 60s, caught a performance by legendary Lenny Bruce and forever changed his career path from the synagogue to stand-up comedy. And over the next five decades, he carved up a career that saw him as a member of the Second City Troupe, do 140 appearances on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show, recorded Grammy-nominated albums. One of them was called Booga Booga. Became a much-respected TV director who helmed such classic sitcoms as Seinfeld, The Bob Newhart Show, Designing Women, and Curb Your Enthusiasm, and hosted his own comedy interview show called Inside Comedy, and gets the chance to encounter a share of great comedy legends and popular stand-up comedians. Now, Steinberg has transcended this impressive comedy career into book form and is a definite must-read for comedy fans and aficionados everywhere, which is entitled Inside Comedy. Now, Inside Comedy reads like a combination memoir and meetings with great comedy minds. We get Steinberg's beginnings in the streets of the predominantly Jewish North Winnipeg neighborhood where he grew up, his years as an inspiring rabbinical student, and his comedy schooling thanks to Second City and his regular on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, where his sermon monologues made him a rising star and rose the ire of CBS, where the Smothers show aired, and conservative middle America viewers. But the meat of this book is Steinberg's personal reader-friendly profiles on the numerous comedians he has befriended or worked with, and his uncomplicated analyses of their respective styles of humor and contributions to the world of comedy. And these profiles are amply sweetened with a wealth of anecdotes that makes us share with Steinberg how lucky he was to encounter so many of the greatest comedians that ever has made so many generations of audiences laugh at their respective unique brand of humor. One of his favorites, and one of my favorites, was Groucho Marx, and he had a chance to not only interview him, but be good friends with him in Groucho's later years. And one of my favorite stories that Steinberg relates in the book is the time that Groucho had an in-person meeting with poet T.S. Eliot in London. And the only thing that Eliot wanted to discuss with Groucho was not literature, but how the Marx Brothers pulled off many of their famous routines in their movies.
Wow.
So basically, he may have wanted to discuss the Possum Book of Cats, and Eliot wanted to discuss Monkey Business, I guess. and the catalog of comedy encounters just begins from there. Inside Comedy also offers stories of David Steinberg's get-togethers, personal and career rise, with an impressive catalog of comedy gold: Robin Williams, Mel Brooks, B. Arthur, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, John Candy, Bob Newhart, Bette Midler, Lily Tomlin, Don Rickles, Jonathan Winters, Larry David, Albert Brooks, Ellen DeGeneres, Will Ferrell, Jackie Mason, and the Smothers Brothers, to name a few. So Inside Comedy is
I think you named them all.
Well, actually, believe it or not, I'm just scratching the surface.
Okay. Well, don't scratch anymore.
No. The itch has been satisfied.
Okay.
So Inside Comedy is the book that comedy fans deserve. It's the ideal book about a long-lasting form of entertainment by someone who worked his way up in the comedy field, and has managed to bridge so many generations by being so open-minded to the builders and the men and women who carry their legacies to more and more people who need the laughs so badly.
I'm just saying, it seems that your religion is winning over mine. There are not too many Christian theologians who decide to go into comedy, but there are people who have gone through rabbinical school or even became rabbis who then turned into comedy. I mean, David Steinberg, you're talking about now, and of course we recently lost Jackie Mason, who actually was a rabbi.
And a cantor, and sang. He had a beautiful voice, too.
Yeah.
And there was, during, I remember one Just for Laughs festival in the mid-90s, there was Rabbi Bob Alper, who was pretty good also.
That's right, yes. Yes, he was very funny.
Yeah, nice man, too.
Very nice man.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. So
I believe the proper terminology is mensch.
Yes, exactly. You got it.
Yeah.
You know what? Look at this. I don't think there were so many, you know, people who went from the pulpit to the stand-up stage, more from the temple to the pulpit, to the stand-up stage. But, you know, there were some comedians who did impersonations of priests, of preachers, like Flip Wilson did.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I guess it was the other way around, sort of.
Exactly. So, again, this week's book is?
It's called Inside Comedy by David Steinberg, and it's published by Knopf, and it's $40.
And what else do you recommend along these genre lines, sir?
Well, there's two books that if you want to read, that put this way, if you're a comedy maven or a student of comedy, these are the must reads you've got to read, you got to have. One is Judd Apatow's book, Sick in the Head. It was a collection of interviews that he conducted over the years, including one with Jerry Seinfeld in 1978 when he was just a high school student at his school's radio station. He was an up-and-coming comedian, so that's a great anthology there. And also Cliff Nesteroff. His first name is spelled K-L-I-P-H. That's right, Cliff. And he wrote a book called The Comedians, and it's a history of American comedy. But he doesn't only focus about their contribution to the world of comedy from vaudeville to the present, but how a lot of their offstage lives, some of them very difficult, helped create their comic personas.
Excellent. So again, this week's book is?
Is Inside Comedy by David Steinberg, and it's published by Knopf, and it's $40.
And, just for giggles, how can we find you?
Well, you won't see me preaching any sermons on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, that's for sure. But you'll see me in the pages of the Montreal Times every week, in print or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
Well, you're welcome. And let's see, where's that rubber chicken that I had? It was here somewhere.
The rubber chicken, of course, is the mascot of the Stuff File program. So it's right here.
But
thanks anyway.
You're welcome.
Stuart Nelman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. I do have a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you. And, of course, an idiot of the day here on a program that is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. As a matter of fact, wherever you stream your podcasts. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's share some more Stuff File news stories, shall we? A Pleasant Grove, Alabama man is accused of various crimes after he was found asleep in the press box of the PG Athletic Complex among piles of chicken fingers, chips, candy, and meth. But I'm getting ahead of myself here, so let's go back to the beginning of this story. On September 17th, 37-year-old Matthew Williamson was charged with unlawful breaking and entering a vehicle and theft of property in the third degree. Pleasant Grove police officers transported him to Jefferson County Jail, where he made a signature bond and walked out. Less than 2 hours after leaving jail, Williamson stole a car in Hueytown and hid it in Pleasant Grove. Okay, let's now flash forward. On the night of September 22nd, an unknown person broke into the concession stand at the Pleasant Grove Athletic Complex, taking a large quantity of snacks. The next morning, Williamson was found asleep in the Athletic Complex press box among piles of chicken fingers, chips, candy, and meth. He admitted to the burglaries and the car theft and was transported back to the Jefferson County Jail. So how much meth do you have to be on for the cops to find you in piles of chicken fingers? Where does one even get a pile of chicken fingers? I mean, to be found amongst piles of chicken fingers, chips, candy, and meth sounds like trick-or-treating from hell. On September 6th, cops in Pasadena, California arrested a man who allegedly broke into a home to steal someone's pet pooper scooper. Two residents of the home alerted cops after hearing banging noises, doors opening and closing, and a male voice. The residents then realized the intruder had messed up the back porch along with breaking into the home via a living room window. One resident saw the burglar leave the home with only one item, the pooper scooper. Cops spotted the suspect and arrested him outside a grocery store. The stolen item was placed inside the store. Cops charged 62-year-old William Martin Austin with suspicion of burglary. Well, that was a crappy thing to do. And Johnny Anderson and his tanker truck were on the A43 en route to Overstone, Northamptonshire, England, when he noticed a string of about 20 cars behind him. When he turned off the highway, so did they, and when he stopped at the entrance to a construction site to which he was delivering concrete, people honked their horns at him. The guy in the front car in the line rolled down his window and asked Anderson which petrol station he was going to. They had evidently been hoping to buy the fuel he wasn't even hauling. Apparently, a shortage of tanker drivers has left some gas stations to run out. When Anderson said he wasn't carrying gasoline, the driver of the first car said, "You could have stopped and told us you weren't a petrol tanker." Really? He's supposed to tell a line of cars following him that he isn't hauling fuel? That's like a second thing that wasn't his job. Meanwhile, I'm kind of enjoying the schadenfreude of the amount of gas all the cars wasted following a cement truck. Yeah. Anyway, boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
So you're stuck in traffic and you really need to pee. What to do, oh, what to do? Well, a man in Ontario came up with an idea. Call 911. Peel Regional Police released the audio in all of its goodness to remind people about the proper uses of dialing 911.
911, Chief Police. Hello. Fire or ambulance?
I need an ambulance, please.
You need the ambulance?
No, I need the police.
Well, then why did you say you need ambulance?
I didn't say ambulance. I said I need police.
Okay. You have the police. Yeah. Where is the emergency?
Actually, the thing is that I have to pee, and these guys are not moving.
You have to pee?
Yeah.
This is your emergency that you have to pee?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How are the police going to help you urinate?
I have to pee, man. And
but I'm not sure what you like me to do that you have to urinate. I can't help you with that. I am disconnecting. Thanks. Bye.
Can't you just hear the angst and disgust in the voice of the dispatcher? Peel Police said that needing to use the bathroom and the car ahead of you isn't moving fast enough is not for 911. They are reminding the public that misusing 911 can potentially prevent someone with a life-threatening emergency from getting help on time. Yeah, apparently here, as you've noticed, Peel Regional Police is using extremely polite language to say, well, piss off. Because why, oh why, would you even think that calling 911 would be a good idea because you're in traffic and you need to pee? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0634. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0634. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, CKUW-FM in Winnipeg, and CFMU in Hamilton. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Guests of the Stuff File program stay at their own homes. Trust me, I'm the voice for this program. I know there's no budget for accommodations. I'm reading this on a futon.